This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 664 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has bombed and attacked areas across Gaza this week, killing at least 640 Palestinians and injuring more than 3,200 between July 23rd and July 30th, according to records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. On Monday night, Al Jazeera's Tariq Abu Azoum stated that dozens were killed in the central areas of Gaza in what residents there described as one of the bloodiest nights in recent weeks. Quote, 30 Palestinians were killed in Nuseirat refugee camp after Israeli forces struck a number of residential houses. Among the victims are 12 children and 14 women, and witnesses say most of the victims arrived at Al-Awda Hospital torn to pieces due to the sheer force of explosions. Local accounts indicate that Israel used booby-trapped robots as well as tanks and drones during this attack. But elsewhere in Gaza, we also see a relative surge in air attacks, including in the designated safe zone of Al-Mawasi in southern Gaza, where a father and his three children were killed in an Israeli attack on a makeshift tent, Abu Azoum stated. Nearly 100 Palestinians were killed on Monday, July 28th, almost half of them killed while trying to obtain food aid, Al Jazeera stated. The Ministry of Health in Gaza stated that more than 110 Palestinians were killed on Tuesday, including 22 who were shot and killed at food aid points. On Wednesday, July 30th, medical sources reported that at least 75 Palestinians were killed by Israel, including 63 who were trying to acquire food. More than half of those aid seekers were killed in northern Gaza, near the Zikim crossing, where 270 people were also injured. That crossing has been yet another area that Israeli forces have turned into a killing field, along with the U.S.-Israeli so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid points in southern Gaza. Journalist Anas Al-Sharif posted this video of Israeli forces firing on Palestinians near the Zikim crossing on July 28th, and just a warning that you'll hear a lot of gunfire. Though Israel allowed a trickle of aid trucks into Gaza this past week, as well as humiliating and dangerous airdropped parcels with the help of the compliant Jordanian army, Palestinians say that not only is it a drop in the ocean compared to the critical need of food, water, fuel, and medicine, but that it is a dehumanizing policy that is helping reinforce Israel's engineered social chaos and starvation across Gaza. On Tuesday, July 29th, the Gaza government media office stated that 109 aid trucks were, quote, subjected to looting and theft as a result of the security chaos that the Israeli occupation is systematically and deliberately perpetuating with the aim of thwarting aid distribution and depriving civilians of it. The Gaza Strip needs 600 aid and fuel trucks daily, which is the minimum required need for the most vital sectors, the media office said. The day before, on Monday, July 28th, the Gaza government media office reported that only 87 aid trucks entered, the majority of which were looted, quote, with direct and systematic Israeli complicity. The Israeli army then carried out what the Gaza government media office said was a complex massacre on Monday when Israel, quote, initially refused to allow the trucks to enter, then targeted the aid supply points belonging to clans and families, resulting in the killing of 11 security personnel. After confirming their deaths, the occupation authorities opened the way for trucks to enter, only to fall into the hands of criminal gangs and thieves under their direct protection, including drones and live ammunition, which targeted civilians. On July 29th, Gaza's civil defense rescue worker Mohammed Abu Luay filmed himself near the Zikim crossing, where crowds of Palestinians tried to obtain flour from a few aid trucks that entered. quote, people are coming back carrying bags of flour, and we are going to carry the martyred and wounded from the area people are returning from, he says. May God reward us. They're all coming back with bags of flour except us. Some carry bags of flour while others carry body bags.
الله يكتب لنا الاجر بس الكل محمل طحين ومروح الا احنا
ناس بتشيل طحين وناس بتشيل اكفال
ناس بتشيل طحين وناس بتشيل اكفال رسمي الناس شايله طحين راح نشيل اكفال حسبي الله ونعم الوكيل يا شيخ.
On Wednesday, July 30th, more than 50 Palestinians were killed and 650 were injured when people headed to receive food aid again near the Zikim crossing, according to the Gaza government media office, which called it a bloody massacre. 112 aid trucks entered the Gaza Strip on Wednesday, most of which were subjected to looting and theft, the media office added. Quote, this bloody massacre and previous similar crimes once again confirms that the occupation is using hunger as a weapon of war, cold-bloodedly targeting civilians seeking sustenance, in flagrant violation of all international and humanitarian laws. While continuing to deny that it is intentionally starving Palestinians, the Israeli army bragged that it dropped aid parcels into Gaza this week. The Gaza government media office said that Israel carried out 6 airdrops on Tuesday. Of those 6, quote, 4 fell in areas under the control of the Israeli occupation army or in neighborhoods from which citizens had previously been ordered to evacuate, exposing those present to direct targeting and killing. This renders these airdrops useless and even dangerous to the lives of starving citizens, end quote. The media office said that a limited airdrop operation on Monday, quote, did not exceed half a truckload of aid, and it landed in red combat zones east of the Tufah neighborhood and Jabalia, where the occupation army is present. These areas that are completely inaccessible to civilians. Several European states also announced that they would take part in airdropping aid instead of forcing Israel to open the land crossings. Belgium announced that it was sending one plane carrying medical supplies and food worth about 600,000 euros to Jordan, quote, soon, and that Belgian officials would remain on standby to conduct further drops in coordination with Amman. This comes after Spain and Germany announced that they would also begin working with Jordanian officials to coordinate airdrops. But as Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated, addressing the starvation in Gaza cannot be achieved through superficial or gaudy measures, but requires an immediate end to the blockade and the opening of safe, stable land corridors to enable the regular and sufficient delivery of food, medicine, and fuel. The only real solution is safe, protected land corridors for aid delivery under UN supervision, Euromed added. 400 aid centers once operated in Gaza before Israel dismantled them. They must be restored. Anything less, including these air spectacles, is complicity in genocide. Airdrops aren't about saving lives. They're about masking a war crime and preserving control. Meanwhile, Israeli and American mercenary forces operating the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites continue to trap, injure, and kill starving Palestinians every day. More than 1,200 Palestinians have been killed and more than 8,000 have been injured trying to obtain aid since the GHF began its operations on May 27th, according to the health ministry in Gaza. A group of children who were kidnapped in late June by Israeli forces at a Gaza Humanitarian Foundation site in Rafah in southern Gaza were released this past week and described their brutal torture and detention in Israel's Sde Tamon concentration camp. According to the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, these 10 children joined thousands of other starving people desperately seeking food aid. However, PCHR reports, quote, they found themselves arrested after facing the risk of death under the Israeli army's fire. According to information obtained by PCHR, The 10 children arrived in miserable health conditions at Nasser Medical Complex in central Khan Yunis on July 24th. They had been released by the Israeli army weeks after their arrest near the aid distribution centers established by Israel. They were released via Karmi Abu Salem crossing following their detention and maltreatment, and then were taken to Khan Yunis with the aid trucks. One of the children testified to the Palestinian Center for Human Rights that at the time of the kidnapping, the Israeli soldiers beat him with his hands and a stick and forced him to take off his clothes. He said that he and the other children were all placed inside metal cages that were 1 square meter large, where it was impossible to lay down or sit comfortably, and were given rotten food to eat. Quote, they then took me to a barrack containing 4 rooms with steel mesh roofs and concrete floors, the child said. The rooms had beds without mattresses and only 1 blanket. We were forced to remain seated on the beds all day and were not allowed to move. 3 days later, I was taken to a concrete room where I stayed for 4 days. It seemed like a hatchery for chicks or rabbits, with 4 large and very hot yellow spotlights. There were 25 detainees inside. During our detention, Israeli special units raided and violently suppressed us on 5 occasions. They stormed the room at around 2 a.m., throwing stun grenades inside, beating us with sticks, and electrocuting us. Each raid lasted approximately 2 hours, marked by physical assault, intense fear, and deafening noise. I still bear visible marks of the electric shocks on my left hand. While in this room, I suffered from full body muscle spasms, convulsions, and 2 episodes of nosebleeds due to my chronic sinusitis. Despite repeated requests for medical attention, no care was provided. When I asked for help, soldiers mockingly told me to drink water to stop the bleeding. The child said that he was interrogated for a full week with daily sessions of 4-hour questioning about, quote, Hamas, tunnels, hostages, cameras, handmade bombs, and identifying houses in my residential area. The interrogator was dissatisfied with my answers because I had no answers to his questions. He beat me with his hands while my feet and hands were tied to a chair. Sometimes the interrogation was done without anger or threats because the investigator already knew detailed information about my family, which made me fear for them. He told me, you are in Sde Tamon prison. After the interrogation ended, I was taken to what is known as the disco room, where Hebrew songs were played loudly and the air conditioner was set to a high temperature. I was blindfolded and my hands and feet were tied to a pipe all day. I remained there for 7 days on the floor. I was given a very small amount of poor quality food and had to eat while handcuffed. They then returned me to the previous room, where I stayed until my release. Upon our arrival at Nasser Medical Complex, the doctors examined me. I was suffering from shortness of breath and severe muscle spasms. After x-rays and a respiratory steam treatment, I felt somewhat better. Later, my father and relatives arrived and took me with them to our tent. That's one of several testimonies that some of the 10 children provided to the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. Another American mercenary has spoken out about the death traps masquerading as the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation for the second time in as many weeks. Speaking to the news program Democracy Now! On Tuesday, Anthony Aguilar said what Palestinians and human rights defenders have been saying since the GHF opened its killing fields in late May, that these sites are designed to lure, trap, hunt, and kill Palestinians with impunity.
Sites have not only become death traps, they were designed as death traps. All 4 distribution locations were intentionally, deliberately constructed, planned, and built in the middle of an active combat zone. Some may argue, well, all of Gaza is a war zone. That may be true, but there are parts of Gaza that are direct or that are determined to be active operational combat zones where Israeli defense forces are operating. Those sites were built in the middle of those areas, intentionally. It's not by accident. That in and of itself, to designate humanitarian distribution sites to service an unarmed, starving population, to build them deliberately in an active combat zone, is a violation of the Geneva Convention protocols. It's a violation of humanitarian law. And in my opinion, it's a violation of humanity in general. The sites, not only where they were built, all four sites around the perimeter and the roads leading in and out are barricaded by razor wire.
That was Anthony Aguilar. As of July 30th, Israel's engineered starvation in Gaza has killed at least 154 Palestinians, including 89 children, according to records by the Ministry of Health in Gaza. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, an international body which monitors food insecurity and the crisis of starvation, warned this week that, quote, the worst-case scenario of famine is currently playing out in the Gaza Strip. Conflict and displacement have intensified, and access to food and other essential items and services has plummeted to unprecedented levels. Mounting evidence shows that widespread starvation, malnutrition, and disease are driving a rise in hunger-related deaths, the IPC stated, adding that the latest data indicates that famine thresholds have been reached for food consumption in most of the Gaza Strip and for acute malnutrition in Gaza City. One in three individuals are going without food for days at a time, the IPC states. Between May and July 2025, the proportion of households experiencing extreme hunger has doubled. The food consumption threshold for famine, what's known as Phase 5, has already been passed for most areas of the Gaza Strip. The IPC said that, quote, immediate action must be taken to alleviate the catastrophic suffering of people in Gaza. This includes scaling up the flow of goods, restoring basic services, and ensuring safe, unimpeded access to sufficient life-saving assistance. None of this is possible unless there is a ceasefire. For infants and children, the effects of severe malnutrition and starvation are becoming catastrophic. Ahmed Al-Farah, the director of pediatrics and maternity at Nasser Medical Complex, told Al Jazeera on Tuesday that his staff are seeing babies so malnourished that they don't have muscles and fat tissue anymore, just skin over bones. Al-Farah said that babies with severe malnutrition are experiencing decreased pancreatic enzyme secretions, leaving them more prone to lethal infections. The long-term effects of the lack of folic acid, B1 complex vitamins, and fatty acids that are essential for the composition of the central nervous system can also hinder or stop critical neurological developments. And if they survive, it can make it hard for a child to read or write or achieve normal cognitive growth later in childhood. 4-month-old Zainab Abu Halib died from being starved by Israel this week. Here's Dr. Ahmed Al-Farah talking about his tiny patient.
The last martyr due to malnutrition is Zainab Abu Halib. Zainab Abu Halib is 6 months old. She was a lovely girl. She born spontaneous vaginal delivery. She's not complaining from any disease, but unfortunately, she has some type of she need some type of milk. We called it extensive hydrolyzed formula, and unfortunately, this formula wasn't available. So the baby got in vomiting and diarrhea. This make severe dehydration and severe malnutrition. This affect her as not gaining weight, and her immunity was in the lower, the lowest level, or the least level. So she got also a bacterial infection and sepsis, so she was unable to swallow, and she was dead yesterday. I came to the hospital as a body because of severe starvation and unavailability of the special formula for milk that it is suitable for her. This is one of the examples for not allowing and for closing borders against milk and against a special formula of milk for children.
Dr. Tanya Haj Hassan, a physician with Doctors Without Borders, told Al Jazeera that serious health risks remain even after food becomes available again. Quote, all of the cells in your body are altered by this. In the intestines, the cells die, she said, adding that heart cells become weak and thinned, absorption of vitamins and fats becomes difficult, and children often die of heart failure, even when they're being refed. Euromed Human Rights Monitor reported this week that another vulnerable population, Palestinian elders, are also dying from starvation. Quote, approximately 1,200 elderly Palestinians have died in the past 2 months due to Israel's starvation policy, malnutrition, and lack of medical care, all of which have intensified in recent days. But the actual death toll may be significantly higher, Euromed says. Quote, in reality, these deaths result from deliberate starvation policies and the systematic dismantling of the health system, forming a pattern of intentional killing prohibited under international humanitarian and criminal law. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight the terrifying experience of trying to get aid in Gaza by Rifat Ibrahim, writing from Gaza. Rifat documents his journey that he took in early June to one of the U.S.-Israeli so-called aid sites. He writes, quote, I knew we were close to the aid site when I saw a large mass of people gathered in front of me. It had taken us all night to get here. My friend Saada Abu Saada and I had left Al-Mawasi near Khan Yunus at 1:30 a.m. and headed south on the coastal road, Al-Rashid Street, toward Rafah. Neighbors in Al-Mawasi had told us to get to the aid site as early as possible because there were not enough provisions for everyone. We thought that by leaving this early, we had a chance to get food. We walked slowly. On our left were miserable rows of tents. On our right was the seashore, calm on the surface, but with Israeli gunboats lined up along the horizon, close enough to be visible with the naked eye. We were not alone in our walk. Many others were headed the same way. An elderly man leaned on his cane and said in commiseration, how hard it is to be hungry. We had 12 kilometers ahead of us, a potentially reasonable distance for a well-fed and nourished person, but we were neither well-fed nor nourished. We walked slowly from exhaustion and hunger. The only calories fueling my body were from scant amounts of lentils and pasta that I had obtained with great difficulty and effort in previous days. My mother, brother, and 5 sisters were back at our tent in Al-Mawasi. Dizzy from hunger, they could barely move. I could no longer bear to see my family wither from starvation. That's why I was walking along the coastal road in the dark on Eid al-Adha, June 6th, tired and hungry, headed toward a so-called American aid center, a place that had declared itself on its social media page as a source of relief. The aid sites run by the American and Israeli-run Gaza Humanitarian Foundation only opened on May 27th, but by early June, it was understood already in Gaza that they were also death sites. Israeli troops were shooting and killing us. Yet the more news spread about these massacres, the more news spread about the aid sites themselves. It is a cruel irony that we are so starved that in the news of massacres, we also hear that there is food available and that there is a possibility that we might get some if we can only survive the site itself. Here we die of hunger, Saad said, and there we may die of bullets. Those are excerpts from The Terrifying Experience of Trying to Get Aid in Gaza by Rifat Ibrahim, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. Musician and music teacher Ahmed Mouin posted this video of a lesson with 2 of his students. He captions this clip, quote, despite the hardship and the shadow of war, my students Amal and Sara have shown incredible dedication. For the past 4 months, they've been training with me and their progress has been remarkable. Now playing with confidence and emotion. In the darkest times, music remains our light. And that's from Ahmed Mouin with his students Amal and Sara. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.